Welcome to Nararacast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and with me as always is my co-host.
Hello, everyone. We've got a really fascinating lineup for you today, starting with a major unexpected pivot from one of the most prominent names in generative AI.
That's right. Midjourney is stepping out of the digital art world and into physical healthcare hardware. It is a massive leap, and the numbers they are projecting are quite staggering.
We are also going to be looking at some enterprise software friction. Microsoft's push to modernize Outlook is hitting some serious performance roadblocks, leaving power users incredibly frustrated.
Plus, we'll round up a few developer tool updates, including some workflow friction in Claude Code and a historic reversal in Swiss energy policy.
Let's get right into the first story.
Midjourney, the company best known for its generative AI image models, has officially launched a medical division called Midjourney Medical. And they aren't just building software. They have unveiled a prototype for a full-body ultrasonic scanner.
This is a massive departure from their core business. The prototype they showed off uses a water bath and a ring of sensors to perform a complete full-body scan in about 60 seconds. And the critical detail here is that unlike a CT scan, it uses no radiation.
The technological foundation for this actually traces back to November 2025, when Midjourney signed a co-development and licensing agreement with Butterfly Network to utilize their ultrasound-on-chip technology. That partnership is what makes this hardware leap even remotely feasible for an AI software company.
Exactly. Butterfly Network has already proven they can shrink ultrasound tech down to a semiconductor level. Midjourney is taking that chip-scale technology, arranging it in a massive physical array, and presumably using their expertise in AI image reconstruction to make sense of the vast amount of data those sensors generate in that 60-second window.
The timeline and scale they are proposing are highly ambitious. Midjourney plans to open its first Midjourney Spa in San Francisco by the end of 2027. The use of the word spa really highlights their goal to shift healthcare diagnostics from a reactive, clinical setting to a proactive, consumer-friendly experience.
And the long-term vision from CEO David Holtz is even more aggressive. He stated the company is aiming for a fleet of 50,000 scanners, conducting a billion scans per month by 2031. To put that in perspective, a billion scans a month would fundamentally alter the global healthcare data landscape.
But reaching that scale means overcoming immense regulatory and technical hurdles. Bridging the gap between a conceptual prototype in a lab and a diagnostic medical device cleared by the FDA is a notoriously grueling process. They have to prove clinical efficacy, safety, and reliability across diverse patient demographics.
There are also inherent physical limitations to ultrasound technology itself. While it's great for soft tissue, ultrasound struggles significantly when it comes to imaging through bone or air-filled spaces like the lungs. It is not a one-to-one replacement for MRI or CT scans when looking at deep tissue structures.
Critics are also raising concerns about the broader implications of mass-market preventative scanning. The medical community often warns about incidental lomas. These are benign anomalies discovered during preventative scans that would never have caused the patient any harm.
Right. Finding those anomalies often leads to a cascade of unnecessary follow-up testing, invasive biopsies, and significant patient anxiety. If Midjourney is doing a billion scans a month, the sheer volume of incidental findings could put an unprecedented strain on the medical system.
It will be fascinating to see how they navigate that. The promise of cheap, radiation-free, proactive health monitoring is incredible, but the execution requires balancing consumer accessibility with rigorous clinical standards. We will definitely be watching to see if that San Francisco spa actually opens its doors in 2027.
Let's shift gears to enterprise software. Microsoft has been heavily pushing users toward the new Outlook for Windows, but a wave of complaints is highlighting severe performance regressions. Reports indicate that the new application can take roughly 10 seconds just to open an email from a Windows 11 notification.
For context, the Outlook Classic application performs that exact same action almost instantly. The root cause of this performance gap comes down to architecture. Microsoft is replacing the native Win32 code of Outlook Classic with a web-based architecture built on WebView 2.
Essentially, the new Outlook is a web browser wrapper running the web version of the email client on your desktop. While this allows Microsoft to maintain a unified code base across platforms, critics argue it inherently leads to higher resource usage, memory bloat, and persistent latency in basic interactions.
And the enterprise pushback has been significant enough that Microsoft has actually retreated on their timeline. They recently postponed the forced opt-out deadline for enterprise users by almost a full year, moving it from April 2026 to March 2027. They've acknowledged that the app simply isn't ready for all workloads yet.
That delay is telling. Power users who manage massive PST files, complex offline rules, or juggle multiple shared inboxes rely heavily on the deep system integration that Win32 provided. The transition to WebView 2 strips away some of that advanced functionality while simultaneously making the app feel slower.
It raises a broader question about desktop application design. Is this 10-second latency just a temporary growing pain that Microsoft will eventually optimize away? Or is it an inherent limitation of using web technologies for heavy desktop clients?
Many developers argue it's the latter. There is a fundamental overhead when you add an entire browser engine between the application logic and the operating system. For lightweight apps, the delay might be imperceptible, but for a tool as dense and heavily used as Outlook, a 10-second wait to read a new message breaks a user's flow entirely.
It's a classic tension between developer convenience and user experience. Maintaining one WebView 2 app is vastly cheaper and easier for Microsoft than maintaining separate native clients for Windows, Mac, and the web. But right now, the users are paying that cost in lost productivity and increased system resource consumption.
We will see how much optimization they can realistically achieve before that new March 2027 deadline hits. Until then, it seems a lot of enterprise administrators will be keeping their fleets on Outlook Classic for as long as Microsoft allows.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up today.
Sounds good. What's first on the list?
Over on GitHub, there's an interesting feature request for Anthropic's Claude Code, specifically issue 69411. Users working across multiple machines, like a WSL setup, a remote VPS, and the web, are struggling to distinguish between their active sessions in the resume picker.
They're asking Anthropic to expose the auto-generated session title to the hook system. This would allow developers to programmatically add machine-specific prefixes or suffixes, solving the context-switching headache without requiring manual renaming every time they start a task.
And sticking with Claude Code, another feature request, issue 69393, is highlighting more workflow friction. Currently, if you want to switch models and ask a question, it requires two separate steps, sending the model command and then typing your prompt.
Users are asking to combine this, allowing the model command to accept an inline prompt. It's a small change, but in a terminal environment where speed is everything, cutting out that extra manual step makes delegating tasks to the agent feel much more fluid.
Moving to energy policy, the Swiss Parliament has officially voted to lift the ban on constructing new nuclear power plants, reversing a phase-out policy that has been in place since 2018. Energy Minister Albert Rösti pushed the change to ensure long-term energy supply.
It's a massive shift, driven by net zero targets and winter supply concerns. However, major Swiss utilities like Axpo are hesitating due to the massive financial risks, and the Green Party is already organizing a national referendum to challenge the decision, meaning the public will likely have the final say.
Finally, a quick update on Epic Games' new open-source version control system, Lore, which we deep-dived yesterday. It is continuing to generate massive discussion on Hacker News as more developers dig into the architecture.
Yeah, the focus right now is on its Rust-based fragment-level deduplication. People are analyzing how it handles multi-gigabyte binary assets natively alongside code, and whether it really has the performance chops to eventually pull major game studios away from Perforce.
That is going to wrap up today's briefing. Thank you for tuning in.
If you'd like to dive deeper into any of the topics we discussed today, you can find links to all the original stories in our show notes.
We will be back tomorrow with more updates from across the tech landscape. See you then.